everyone. My name is Sam Huff, and I'm alongside Taryn Sargent once again. And this is the QU Student Podcast on the QU Media Podcast Network. We are here again, or we are here once again in Studio Q at North Campus today on April 24th, 2023. And we are getting pretty close to graduation. Taryn, are you excited or are you going a little bit crazy right now?
I think I'm just more anxious because obviously, like, I have a lot of great offers on the table for graduate school, but I have to pick one, and deciding is not my strong suit.
That is fair, but I mean, at least you have multiple options to choose from. It's better than none, right?
It definitely is. I'm very grateful.
You were looking at Pittsburgh last time I heard correctly, or a school in Pittsburgh. I'm sorry.
Yep. I am looking at Point Park University. And I'm very excited about the potential to be able to work in a downtown area.
Nice. Well, I wish you the best of luck on that. And yeah, I'm kind of in the same boat, just trying to turn in all these last minute assignments, including what we're going to talk about today, our final senior thesis that we have both started with Dr. Schleppenbach back in August. So I'm going to start with mine then. Mine was kind of, so our senior project, just to explain a little bit, was supposed to pick a communication theory that we would actively research on, not only try and find information about other theories that were related to that, but then go in further with our own research, with our question, hypothesis, to see what we could gather. And with mine, obviously sports have been part of my life since I was a young kid. I've been influenced here being an NCAA athlete, just like many other students here at the school are. And so I wanted mine surrounded around sports. Recently, just got fallen in love with a new sport, and that was soccer. And cheering for a team overseas really just got me interested in where fan support comes from again, seeing it over there and like how diversified it is and how small the clubs can be for those towns over there. Really just wanted to make me understand how that works here in America and how we end up generally deciding to choose the sports teams that we want to cheer for. So my original question was what influences individuals to cheer for their sports teams. After research, just finding more out about geographic location, storylines, sports media marketing since the 1980s. But then the one that I really got around was family dynamics, parent-child relationships. And I really started looking into more of that because just started taking me back to my personal feelings when I had positive childhood experiences with my father, watching the Green Bay Packers when they won the Super Bowl. Looking at the Blues as they started getting good, always being a hometown Cardinals fan because my mom's side of the family always loved the Cardinals. So eventually I ended on the hypothesis that parent-childhood relationships is a key indicator in deciding the behaviors and values that their children decide to be interested in sports. So how I wanted to look at that first was just by trying to conduct a survey. They were all from people of Quincy University. About 90% of the survey initially was college-age students, 18 to 22, with a few other academic professors as well as a few coaches that I was able to get hands-on from their work. And from these findings, I was able to just see a strong correlation, not only everyone that I polled answered that they are actively watching a team or sports, whether that's TV, social media, or even print media. And I've pretty much expected that, as in a media-saturated world now, it's pretty easy to get headlines from anywhere. More in that as that went, about 75% of the study did say that they primarily cheer for one team and that team was their nearest geographical location. Around 60 to 65% of those said that their parents also cheered for the same team. And I also thought it was interesting that 50% of the study correlate their favorite team with their personal identity, as well as going into the values. And so had some more questions explaining just possible situations. There's a Likert scale at the end trying to figure out if said situation happened, what would this do to cause you to change your teams, if at all? Those situations included if your significant other was cheering for a different team, if you happen to move across the country, which would affect geographic location, if your team was facing a large ethical scandal. And from all these Likert scales, the maximum from any of them was only 10% said that they had even an inclination to change, which was 4 or 5 on the scale, which made me wanted to really investigate why these bonds were so strong and why people were so resistant to change. So then I was able to conduct a focus group. Now, I will say to start, the focus group does have some parameters I wish I could have fixed just on constriction of time and trying to find a nice variety. I was just able to get 14 members. They were all from my men's lacrosse team, so they were all male, and they were all currently student athletes. And I'll get into those I'll put that as an asterisk after I get through the research. But through these discussions, the same associations came from my initial introductory questions. A lot of them cheered for their favorite team. They were all 80% of the focus group cheered for their closest location. The outlier from that, which I, from one participant, was originally from Detroit, but he's moved around all of his life, one from California, one from Texas, one time in Colorado. And even though he currently resides in Texas with his family, him and his father are still active Detroit fans, huge Detroit Lions fans, huge Detroit Red Wings fans. And from his quote, I'm paraphrasing a little bit here, but he kind of went on with, even though I've moved around, I still remember going to those Lions games as a young age, and even though they were really bad, it was still very memorable at the same time. And he also kind of explained a little bit on the aspect of it really would mean a lot now to watch the Lions win because we were able to go through those bad times together. So he holds those memories a little bit closer to himself than any new team that he's been with, regardless of geographical location, which I thought was really interesting and kind of supported my fact. Few more instances of that. Another candidate from Canada has a fan of the Oilers because he does not have a team directly next to him in his province. When asked the question if a team did ever move to his location, would he end up cheering for him? And he went on to say, I would most likely cheer for them, but it wouldn't override the current love I have for the Oilers and the history that, like, me and my father have had from watching those games together and being able to watch them hoist the cup. So throughout this focus group, I thought then it was just really great being able to connect the dots. Barb kind of mentioned how she liked it, how I did it in reverse order, kind of, instead of in getting the introductory basis, yes, no, and then having discussion to be able to dissect it. So I was really proud of that. So overall, from the results, I would say there are still multiple factors that obviously shape our sport identities and our interests now, especially with the integration of sports social media marketing. Now with a super big world, we're able to see basically any team that we want in the click of a button. I mean, I'm honestly kind of an opposite effect of what I was trying to prove, because my parents have never heard of soccer. I'm currently a giant Brentford fan, and I don't get to see them. I went to one game because I was lucky thanks to my trip, but, you know, I had to get up on a 6-hour different time zone just to cheer for them, and that's just because of the storyline. But overall, even with the social media and all the distractions, I think generally that parents shared their sports experiences with those children, and that helps resonate at a young age. That's one of your earliest building blocks, not only of personal connection with your parents, but also finding out about your own personality and what your interests are. So I feel like with those positive experiences in place at a young age, it becomes a very strong bonding mechanism, and it's really hard for those people to latch on to another team or something that they feel emotionally and personally invested with. So, yeah, that was kind of really eye-opening. I'm happy that technically my hypothesis is in the right direction, but that wasn't really the overall goal of my project. I was just really interested in what people, who they wanted to cheer for and why, and hearing about those questions and understanding how you could have connection with that, it's kind of just what I love talking about. So it was really an eye-opening project, very long, intensive, but I am proud with what ended up coming out of it.
I actually think, like, you should maybe name that, and maybe it could become a theory one day, and I think it could apply more to more things than sports. I think the same thing applies to, like, TV shows. Like, I feel like a lot of people bonded over Star Wars and that kind of stuff because they grew up watching it with their family. And I feel like those types of things, like, you see that communication and social connection happen in the way that you're saying with sports over different things that you watch continually, like a TV show series or a movie series, where you're able to watch and enjoy and do that event over and over again over a long period of time, and that creates a bond over that.
Yeah, I would agree. It'd definitely be interesting, as I say in my topics. I mean, this could be discussed further from my focus group. I would like to say I think it could have been, I don't know personally, but as me being an athlete myself, you know, I've been built up with values of, you know, teamwork, commitment, loyalty. So when asking these questions with these other athletes, I did wonder if those values, not only do they believe in them for them as an athlete, but as for the teams that they support, and does that go into their support or their love for their team? So I would like it to be widened next time if I was able to get athletes and non-athletes, and especially more females in another focus group discussion to see if it is just a male tendency to gravitate towards sports, or if it's also those positive moments that can happen with both genders. I think, yeah, as you mentioned, TV and media is the exact same thing. I feel like it was even easier with media, especially how you mentioned Star Wars, and because those corporations, those movie companies obviously are aware of that, and that's why we keep seeing saga reboots. So thankfully sports isn't, you know, we like to make jokes that it can be scripted, but thankfully it isn't scripted. So we're not just getting complete reruns of, oh, it's 2023, let's bring back 85 Bears. Like, let's bring back them. Like, so yeah, no, definitely. If I do have any masters down the road, I will probably head back to this theory and circle it and try and investigate it more.
Cool. I definitely think it leaves a lot that could be explored. Kind of because we both actually kind of use media in our research, my hypothesis was that social media affects individuals to cultivate an unrealistic self-presentation, not only on social media platforms, but in reality. I put out a survey, like Sam, I did my survey first and then did a focus group. And my survey at first actually ran into a little bit of a road bump. I would try to get people to take my survey, and it was online. And I sent it out, and I actually reached out to professors and sent it out to different class periods. And it just went, like, when the people received it, they either didn't take all of it, and so they didn't submit it, or they would submit it but then not answer all the questions. So I do have some kind of incomplete responses for my digital survey questions. Because of that, I kind of had to switch it up. After talking with my peers and also my professor, I went ahead and printed out the same surveys, so the same exact questions on the Likert scale, and I did go and sit in common areas, like in the cafeteria, and went and passed out and provided the pencils and had people fill it out. I did obviously get more finishers that way, but I believe that honestly, the reluctancy to do my survey is proof in itself that my theory is probably a little bit. It might be a little correct, Sam. If I have to admit it, I think a lot of people like went through my survey and went through the written survey, and were just filling out things that make themselves feel good, making themselves that self-presentation that they are happy and they are obviously truthful online. But then I also received, because I left it open at the end of my surveys for survey participants to be able to really write down some of the things they felt like during the survey. And interestingly enough, this is one of the responses I got after this particular survey participant, which I am going to leave anonymous because of IRB. But they, after filling out this whole survey and putting that they pretty much present the same in real life as they do on social media, decided to write this statement, which is, I think my presentation on social media is not necessarily different from who I am, but much more superficial. Sure, I put filters on my photos, but I've stopped editing my body. I post times in my life that I genuinely enjoyed and have fun doing and want to share that with others. I think where I am still superficial is in the aspect of I highlight happy moments, but do not acknowledge some of the deeper things that I'm going through or how I experienced that I posted about maybe wasn't as fulfilling or joyful as I made it seem. And that is a survey participant that was on digital, and this survey participant actually did have quite a few followers, and I think that might have had a sway. A lot of the range for followers was on the upwards side. We had a survey participant that had 2,285 followers, and we also had all the way down to 76 followers, and we did have some people that say they didn't have some of the social media platforms, so that also played a factor into it. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of the two responses I got on the digital surveys were actually from people with a higher following count, and that was them putting down a contradicting statement to how they filled out the survey, which was interesting in itself because it's like they filled it out alongside their like presentation, what made them feel comfortable, and then they decided to actually really look at themselves and then obviously put down that statement. So I was kind of looking forward into the focus group. I did want to originally do another survey, another round, and see if I put on there that, oh, this may be posted with your name, if people would then, because they think it's going to be presented to society, change their answers. But because of their reluctance to take the survey that I had the first time around, I decided to just go ahead and go with a focus group because I saw some light with the statements, and I was like, okay, if people are able to actually state this, then maybe I would get more clarity in a focus group. So I did go ahead and do a focus group. It was Easter dinner. And so again, kind of like Sam, it was mostly just my teammates that were there. There were other people of like my teammates' family that were also there. And they were a little bit captive, if I do say so myself, because, you know, food was there, but I wasn't like forcing anyone to answer any questions. It's kind of an open discussion. I did voice recordings, and people really like kind of opened up and exposed themselves to be like, yeah, I think that there is some negativity in social media, and then I think that I only post events and I only highlight the events that I'm proud of, but I don't really share like what really goes on in my life. Like if I have an issue, everyone agreed that if they had something going on, they weren't going to post it. And I believe they like the thing that came up in that focus group was that there's a difference between social media life and private life. But what I will say is I think everyone there did not have a really mass following. And I think Quincy University in general does not have a lot of people that are really hyper popular on social media. Mm-hmm. And I think if I did this exact same experiment at a bigger institution and had access to people that are more active on social media, because the people that I did survey are not as active on social media, I think I would see different results. And so I think that this is something I would touch back on for my graduate studies, kind of expand upon that. And I really do think that I base this off of cultivation theory, which is by Gerbner. And I really do believe in that theory because it is strictly television, that can be applied to social media. And I think what people see on social media is what they tend to believe unless it challenges them directly. And I think people, when they present themselves on there, we don't try to challenge it directly because we take it as we're trying to make offense. But at the same time, we know a lot of stuff on there is not true. And we even put stuff on there that's not true about ourselves. So I think that there's a lot of hope in social media, but overall, I believe that, honestly, social media has affected our self-presentation in real life. And I believe that my results are too inclusive to say I for sure, like, my hypothesis was proven correct. I believe there's a lot of outside things of, for example, not answering responses and having not wanting to take the survey that kind of hint that I was correct. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I don't have the concrete evidence of people actually stating as such that my hypothesis was correct. So,
gotcha. Well, yeah, I mean, from hearing it in our class periods together with Barb, I mean, I would tell you every time too, even though you don't think you have concrete evidence, I would agree that those back and forths from your initial survey or people hiding things out is kind of an answer to your point that you were trying to make, that people are not really telling the truth about their pages behind the screen, you know. I really think I do agree, as you say too, if you were at a bigger university or even in your master's work and you can get reach out to another university closer in vicinity, I think you would be getting a vast difference in not only social media presentation, also activity and how that affects each person. You mentioned the follower range, and I think it was also a good point that how you brought up, especially with people with a low follower range, how social media could be represented differently for them because they're not posting. They're more of just an active watcher, I guess, for that. And I think that'd be an interesting point to look on as well, and how not only how social media changes are perceptive, but how it can also make people become reclusive and be almost afraid to post to others.
Yeah, I definitely think that's a big area. I think that I feel like it would be nice to see, like, a study kind of our classmate Ashley is not here, obviously, because mm-hmm. she's not in this class. But she kind of did one on mental health. And I think it would be interesting if we put a mental health spin on mine where it's, like, levels of anxiety to how frequent someone posts. Mm-hmm. I think we'll see, like, on the high spectrum, if someone has, like, a lot of followers, like, they would probably have high anxiety about posting because they wanted to do well. But I believe that people that have low amounts of followers just don't want to post at all because they would be anxious about how it would be received, period. So I think that, like, I think social media, as I said, like, has a lot of positives, but I believe that there's a lot of things that go left unsaid about how social media has an impact in our life.
Yeah, and I'd agree. And again, great research. And now we just got to get through presenting it to more people.
Yes, pray for us.
Well, that looks like we're going to wrap it up here. Thank you again, Taryn, for coming on with me. This will be our final podcast of the year, unfortunately. Kind of crazy. Actually, final podcast in general for both of us.
Yep. I will be done.
Yeah. It's been a wild ride. But thank you, Taryn, again, once for coming on. And thank you guys for once again listening to the QU podcast. I'm Sam Huff, alongside Taryn Sargent, and this has been a production of the QU Media Podcast Network. Have a great day.